Welcome to the Kona Edge, where you'll discover what the best triathletes in the world do to give them the edge.
Thank you so much for listening to and or downloading and listening to the Kona Edge. As we head towards the end of 2017, we delve into our archives once again. And this one also over 2 years old. And if you've been around from the start, you may have heard it, but few people have. This podcast has grown quite a bit, and these episodes are way, way, way into the depths of our archives. And today we chat to someone who I've followed her career as far as Ironman and racing for quite a while now. She raced on the Big Island. She was based in Netherlands at the time, and subsequently has moved back to South Africa. Lives just outside Cape Town in a place called Stellenbosch. Her and her hubby put on a couple of very, very cool triathlon training camps. If you want to find out more, just pop me a mail, brad@thekonaedge.com, and I'll send you all the details. Probably one of the most spectacular venues you'll ever find amongst vineyards and mountains. It's just beautiful. So, no, I'm talking about Anshin. Anshin Clark. She's now Anshin Beerboom, that's her surname now that she's married. But yeah, I thought I'd share Anshin's story with you once again and let you relive some of her glory on the Big Island. Today's coach in the spotlight is Coach Stephen Brands and Next Level Triathlon. They've proved their results year after year. Steve has personally guided athletes to an ITU Age Group World Championship, Ironman Hawaii, and has qualified over 20 athletes to the 70.3 World Championships. Steve isn't your traditional multi-sport coach. He's a full-time endurance coach who works with athletes remotely as well as athletes in a DTE in Madison, Wisconsin. Steve is also one of a few coaches in the USA High Performance Mentorship Coaching Program, where he gets to work with the select high performance athletes in the USAT CRP program. In 2015, Steve was selected to run a week-long Cam Tri camp in Trinidad and Grenada, where he was responsible for working with their top athletes as well as educating their coaches on proper racing, training, and season preparation. Some of Steve's athletes have won an ITU Age Group World Championship, won multiple USAT Age Group National Championships, won USAT Duathlon National Championships, podiumed at the 2016 Ironman World Championships, have run sub-3-hour marathon during the Ironman, and qualified athletes to Ironman and 70.3 World Championships. If you'd like to find out more about Steve and Next Level Triathlon, all you need to do is head over to thekonaedge.com/coaching or click through to nextleveltriathlon.org. All the details on that website. Okay, that's thekonaedge.com/coaching. And if you are a coach or have a coaching business and you'd like to be featured here on the Kona Edge, all you need to do is head over to that exact webpage. It's thekonaedge.com/coaching. Anshin, welcome onto the Kona Edge. Nice to have you. We join you. You're in Amsterdam. We're in Johannesburg in South Africa as we're recording this. How's Amsterdam as we speak?
Autumn is here. For a run this evening, the autumn leaves is out.
So. I was going to say, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, the autumn colors are nice, but darkness is settling in fast at the moment.
Yeah, I guess that's one of the joys of living in Europe, and particularly going through winter in Europe. But I'm gonna touch on training sort of out of season with regards to racing on a different hemisphere and how tough that is. But let's delve a little bit into your background and particularly in triathlon and your journey to Kona. And before I get started, I want to hear from you. The word Kona, what does Kona mean to you?
Yeah, it's such a dream come true. It's a dream come true. I sacrificed a lot, but if I had to choose again, I will do it all over again.
I mean, it's like you say, you sacrificed a lot, and we'll find out a little bit about that in a moment as well. But a lot of hard work and a sort of reward is, and I think it's an Ironman thing. It's not just a Kona thing, but Racing an Ironman, you put so much time and effort into the training that race day is almost a reward for the hard work you've put in.
Yeah, it makes you feel, the Ironman made me feel invincible. It felt like you can conquer the world, and I'm sure a lot of people say the same.
Anshin, where did your journey to triathlon begin?
So I come from a running background. I've been running ever since I could remember. Was doing track and field when I was in my teens. So I was actually a really, really, basically spent all my teens on podiums for 800, 1500, 3000, cross country. But swimming was non-existing. It was barely a survival skill, and I never ridden a bike my entire life. I never owned one when I was a kid. At university, I think I had one for about 2 seconds. Didn't know how to ride and was too embarrassed to figure out how. So that didn't last. And then I think in 2008, a friend tried to get me to do a little women's triathlon with her. But it was even shorter than a sprint distance. And I was like, this is ridiculous to do such a short race. So I didn't actually do that race. And I entered a sprint in Bath in outside London in England. But I still didn't know how to ride a bike. I didn't own one. So I borrowed a bike. It was a canary yellow mountain bike. And off I went. I think I came off the bike going uphill. Because I got a fright from a car passing. I think I got a lot of sniggers from people looking at this because, you know, triathletes is all gear. And I looked like an absolute fool on this mountain bike. And yes, two guys heckled me when they came past me, saying, you still need to get to the run yet. And the fire in my belly kicked in. I spent the next of the bit of the race chasing them down. I caught them halfway on the 5K sprint. Heckled them back, and yeah, that's where the addiction started.
You're obviously very competitive, and racing as a runner, and those sort of middle to or the shorter to middle distance races has obviously bred something into you that you love the chase, that you love the feeling of competing and getting onto a podium. How important is it to have that built into you in order to qualify for a race like Kona?
You definitely need that fire in your belly. It takes you through, especially in endurance racing. It gets you through the dark moments, because I think that fire is bigger than feeling, okay, I don't want to carry on. Because it's always a mind over matter. Your body is telling you need to stop, and your mind keeps you going. And I think having that competitiveness just helps you push that bit harder. I don't think I've ever raced a race that I never that I didn't finish, even though, I mean, maybe it's the stubbornness in me, but I like to succeed in everything I do. And I think that's maybe the competitiveness in me.
You mentioned that first one was a sprint. When did the decision come, and how was that decision made to step up to not just a half Ironman distance, but to the big one?
So I dabbled in the short ones. I had no idea what I was doing. I downloaded just training programs from websites because I was working all over Europe. I was working in corporate and very, very long hours. So I couldn't really fit in more than what you could do for sprint distances. And then in 2012, I was like, I climbed the corporate ladder. I felt like I break through that challenge, and I needed a new challenge. And I was like, I need something 4 times as big as I think I'm possible of doing. And I was like, well, naturally that has to be an Ironman. So I decided, okay, I'll first try half Ironman. I needed somewhere warm, being South African, and I was still in England at the time. So I decided to do Brazil half Ironman. And up until that point, I was doing all my training on my own because I was working in Stockholm, working in London at the same time, managing two projects. So it was very, I couldn't join triathlon clubs. I didn't have training buddies. So I still didn't really know what I was doing, but I did get myself a coach, which helped a lot. And then at the same time, I also entered Ironman South Africa the following year. And yeah, after I did that half Ironman in Brazil, for me it was just, I think at that time it was just to get under 6 hours, I have no idea how long this race is going to take me. And I actually came fourth for my age group. And I didn't know anything about slot allocations and world champs. And there was a bunch of Argentinian guys saying, look, we think you're going to get a slot. You know, make sure you have the money. And I didn't even know what they were talking about. And actually did get a slot on Roll Down for Vegas, but I didn't have the money. But yeah, that put the extra fire in my belly. And that's when I started thinking about stuff like world champs and Kronas and started reading about it more.
And as far as the training goes, I mean, it's almost, I mean, you say you found training programs online and you sort of figured it out for yourself. When did you make the conscious decision to actually get a coach and get some help and really push hard to try and get a slot at Kona?
So for my first Ironman South Africa, I got a coach. She was also an age grouper. She raced in Vegas. And she was actually also my physio in London. So she coached me through my first Ironman, but at that time I was still very much high demanding job. So I was like, look, I need to do this Ironman with the least amount of hours I can do it and still be competitive. I raced it. I felt like I was competitive, but for me, it wasn't enough. I needed more. And, after I did my first Ironman, I quit my corporate job. I was one step away from partner and people said, you're crazy. And I was like, no, I need to go to Kona. So I took 9 months off work. And I was like, I need someone that has done Kona many times and knows what it takes to get there. So I contacted Brainerd Tissing. At that point, I already moved back to South Africa. And I said, I'm sure the South African traffic circle didn't know me back then because I wasn't known in South Africa coming from like abroad. And I contacted him and said, I need you to get me to Kona. And I'm sure he must have thought, who is this girl? She's nobody, thinking she can go to Kona. But he looked at me and he said to me, you're obviously very determined. So yeah, I think what it takes is get yourself a coach that knows what it takes to get to Kona.
You mentioned Reynard said you were obviously determined and you had made the decision that you were going to Kona. How much of getting to Kona was making that decision that you had said, you know what, this is what I want. I'm not going to settle for anything. You packed in your job and you really focused as an age grouper to get there. Do you think that was half the battle won making that decision?
Absolutely. I think for me, doing project management, it all works the same. You pick a date when you want to do it. I picked a date. I decided I want to be in Kona by the following year, 2014. And then I started making a plan on how I'm going to get there. I picked the coach, and then I got him to do the program for me. And then all it needs is to follow the steps, follow the program. I'm very determined. So I followed everything Raina told me to a T.
I think that's a very important lesson there, Anshin, that people will spend a lot of money and effort and time to find a coach and work with a coach. But when the coach suggests they do something, they almost second guess those decisions and do their own thing. How much of it was a case of Reynard was telling you to do something that you thought, you know what, Reynard's crazy, but he obviously knows better. I'm going to do it. Did you ever think, you know, I can't do this. Maybe there's a better way to do it.
I think every coach has got their own style. I think it's the same way as when you get someone for any sort of advice is you can't start following one nutritional plan and then another nutritional plan and you start getting lost in all the advice you get. So when you pick a coach, you need to believe in your coach and your coach needs to believe in you. And that's the recipe for success.
Would you say that getting a coach who really buys or that you buy into the same philosophy as that coach was the biggest and most important thing you did in your journey to get to Kona?
That's definitely one part. I think the other part is obviously you need to want to put in the hard work. And I was very determined. I think, I mean, for me, it definitely helped packing in the job, because I tend to be a high energy person and I tend to fit in too many things in 24 hours, where I had time. Reinhardt is a high volume coach, and taking the 9 months off work, I was able to eat properly, fit in the time to sleep properly. I mean, I would literally get up, train, come home, eat breakfast, sleep a couple of hours, and then do the same thing all over again. And I think for me, the biggest difference it made was the fact that I was getting the proper sleep in.
Yeah, rest is a big thing. You mentioned the hard work, and earlier on you spoke about the sacrifice it takes to get to Kona. Tell us a little bit about the amount of work that you had to put in the build up to not Kona itself, but eventually qualifying and getting that slot.
Yeah, so I put kind of all my eggs in one basket when I decided I want to do it the following year, and packing in the job. But then I had setbacks where I started having Achilles problems, and for a whole of October, November, December, I couldn't run. I didn't do one bit of running. I was aqua jogging, and I was spending time on the Alta-G with Reinhardt in Velocity Center. So you could see slowly your dream slipping away. And it was 1 week before a half Ironman South Africa, and I still wasn't running. And I went to see a very renowned physio in Cape Town, and she said to me, "You will not run. You will not train one bit longer, one day longer. You need to take 4 months off. Your body is completely out of line, and forget about your racing this year." And I picked up the phone, I phoned Reinhardt, and I was like, "What shall I do?" And he's like, "Just go and race Ironman South Africa, or half Ironman South Africa." And I was like, "Well, he's the coach. I'm going to follow his advice." And I think I ran 1 6-kilometer before half Ironman South Africa, did the race. I was obviously very broken by the end of it, but it was enough to get a slot on roll down for Canada World Champs. And I just decided, well, stuff whatever the physios are saying, I got myself back running. So again, I think it was, I mean, my Kona dream, my Canada dream, would have been ruined if I followed the physio's advice and didn't listen to the coach. So there was that part. I managed to get through it. The Kona dream was still alive. And then I was like, well, I took a slot to Canada. And I've had 9 months off, and I still very much want the slot for Kona. I'm not sure how I'm going to fund all of this. And obviously I had a lot of people saying to me, well, you know, how are you going to fund all of this? So, and while I was still trying to figure out how the hell I'm going to do this, I got a phone call from Amsterdam for a job, and they were pushing me to start at the beginning of February. And I was like, well, if I can get at least another month of hard training in South Africa, maybe I can push this job till March. So it wasn't ideal. I 3 weeks before Ironman South Africa, I moved to Amsterdam. And, you know, I moved into the winter. I had no training buddies. I didn't know the training ground. But it was a risk I had to take, because I still wanted to fund this Kona dream. So I did it. And, yeah, I pulled it all off.
Talk to me about that time that you spent in Amsterdam ahead of Ironman South Africa. You mentioned the weather was slightly different to what you were used to back in South Africa. What advice would you give to someone who's possibly training in a different hemisphere? So they live in the Northern Hemisphere, they're planning on doing a race in the Southern Hemisphere, or vice versa. Somebody from the Southern Hemisphere that's going to race a race, whether it be Kona or one of the European or North American Ironmans. It's difficult to... particularly when everyone else around you is not training, were you training for this goal race? It's difficult to stay motivated and do the work that needs to be done.
Yeah, and someone I spent some time, it was many years ago, working in Iceland, and I was training there through a winters. And the Icelandic always said to me, "There's no such thing as bad weather, just bad gear." So I guess that stuck, and that helped me pull through. You know, I was like, there's no such thing as bad weather. You just need the proper gear. So yeah, you need the proper gear going into a winter. I suffer in the cold, but yeah, I arrived in Amsterdam and literally built my bike and on a Saturday and started cycling north. Got horribly lost. On my way back, I was freezing my ass off. And it was about, I realized I was not going to get back before dark. And I was a race against the darkness. And, I guess I was about 20 kilometers outside Amsterdam when it went dark and I was on some bike path. And I was like, yeah, I'm so actually quite lucky this is not South Africa, because then I would have really been in trouble. But it being in Northern Europe, you're safe. I found a bus stop and luckily convinced the bus driver to take me back to Amsterdam.
I love it. What a cool story. And Jen, yeah. let's talk about race day itself and the day you qualified. I mean, an Ironman is a... It's a long day for most people, and even if you're out there for 9 or 8 hours or 10 hours or whatever it is, or 17 hours, it's a long day generally compared to most things that people do, and everyone goes through patches where they really struggle and they go through dark times, and I'm sure you did too on race day. What do you do to dig yourself out of one of those holes where you're just really struggling on race day, and you know that you have to keep pushing really hard if you want to achieve your goal?
Preparing before the race, preparation for me is, I'm the kind of person that always try to see everyone around me is okay. I don't find it easy to be selfish, but to prepare for a race like this, you need to be selfish. You need to focus. You need to visualize. And for Ironman South Africa last year, I told my family I don't want them to be there. I told friends I don't want them to be there. I told my then current boyfriend I don't want him to be there. He actually left me because of it. But I needed to. I realized if I want to do it, I needed the focus, and I needed to focus on me. So for me, I think that was my biggest, my best prep I could have done, because I just focused on me and I didn't have any distraction. Where I think a lot of people might thrive on the support they might get from others, I find it as a bit of a distraction. So that's number one. And number two, through the dark moments, I think you visualize it. Visualization is so important for a long day like that. You visualize how you get yourself through those moments. But my final thing, when I really can't get myself out of that black hole, is I find distraction talking to other athletes and hearing their stories, finding out about them helps me get me through that 5 minute of, and then you show it.
I think you raise an important point. You talk about the 5 minutes of tough. It's as much as we love the feeling good in a race like Ironman, you know that that's never going to last forever, but the bad patches don't last forever either. You just got to keep pushing through. Know that it will come to an end. You just got to keep on keeping on.
Yeah, totally. You need to keep moving. And it's the same as what you apply in training, steady and consistent as, in racing. You just need to consistently and steadily keep moving.
And Chin, you mentioned that you almost felt a bit selfish, going into that race and focusing on you. Ironman can be a very selfish and self-absorbed activity. Some of the sacrifices from a personal life perspective, you mentioned you and your boyfriend breaking up around the time as well. It's not easy to get that balance right. What advice would you give to people? And I know it's difficult because I don't think anybody does get it right, but from the lessons you've learned, is there anything you would do differently, anything you would change around that side of things?
No, I think last year I needed... I'm just the kind of person that's naturally selfish, so I find it incredibly hard. So for me, last year, I moved away from everyone I knew. I arrived in Amsterdam. I didn't know anyone there. Yeah. And I kind of kept to myself. I stayed away from relationships because I realized if I want to do this successfully, and focus on my training where I don't feel guilty towards anyone for going for a 6-hour training and coming back and being tired and getting into bed. I still haven't figured out how you do the balance with family, and kids. I must say this year, I feel like I've tried to get a lot more balance, but, yeah, it's tricky. I think for some people, they find it, easier to balance the, because the trade-off is being on your own, you don't have the support. Whereas when you have family and kids, you do have some form of support. But for me, the guilt factor of, going off and being selfish, takes away a bit more. So I chose purposely to do it myself.
Yeah, it's definitely not easy, but you mentioned the visualization when things are getting tough in a race and working through those dark patches. Did you sort of think about being on the big islands in those dark patches during Ironman South Africa, or was that something you sort of, once you had got that slot after the race, that in the months leading up to Kona, training for that, is that something you sort of visualized what it would be like being there and running on that sort of famous Ironman turf?
Yeah, for me, I always say you need to see beyond the finish line. So my visualization was always beyond the finish line of Ironman South Africa, and that being Kona. And so similarly for Kona, I had to see beyond that finish line. So I actually booked my trip via San Francisco back, and my visualization stretched as far as the Golden Gate Bridge. And for me, it was like the new chapter in life. So yeah, it's very, very important to see beyond that finish line.
Talk to me about the experience of being on the big island, that you've put in the hard work to not only train for a race like Ironman South Africa, you've got your qualification spot, you've then done the training for Kona itself, and arriving on the big island, you were there, and I'm sure, I mean, for most people who do an Ironman in whatever city it is, you get there and you look pretty intimidated by the amount of racing snakes around you, and I'm sure it's no different on Kona. It's probably worse because it's all the best athletes in the world. But tell me a little bit about that feeling of when you first arrived in Hawaii and what was going through your mind.
Well, I had, my journey was a little bit longer than that. I spent a month out in Canada, preparing for half Ironman World Champs in Canada. And I just had the most amazing time training, but that was also a very good build up to Kona. And then similarly for Kona, I had a month out in Kona, preparing for the race. So I kind of arrived before all the madness started. I settled into island life before all the racing snakes and their gear. And yeah, it is rather intimidating. Everybody is stronger, fitter, leaner, meaner, better gear. By then I felt like I was settled in. So I was like, this is my island before the athletes actually started. So yeah, I had an amazing time leading up to Kona. It was for me quite an epic journey. The only unfortunate thing was I arrived. I mean, if you can have such a thing, because that hot rock is bloody hot. And I arrived in the middle of a heat wave, and I was still doing a big training block on arrival. I think it took my energies a bit. I don't know if I do Kona again, if I would spend a month out there, especially it being that hot, and it might take away some of your energy leading up to the race.
What did you love about the island? I mean, did it live up to expectation? You'd obviously had an idea in your mind of what it was going to be like. Was it exactly as you thought it would be?
It was that and everything more. I mean, you've heard from so many people this magic island, and it's really, really hard to explain it to anyone unless you've been there. The craziness, the madness, the build-up, the athletes. The group of South Africans, we all connected before everyone was arriving, was really such a special group of people. that we really connected in the time building up to it. So yeah, it was a very, very special, memorable journey.
You've spoken about the gear a few times in our chat, and how intimidating it can be when you get to a triathlon and you see the amount of gear around. But I mean, gear is important. It's not the be all and end all. Obviously, the better the gear you have, the better you can perform. You've still got to do the work, though. What's the one bit of gear that you use that you couldn't survive without? That you know what? It's just the best thing that you've ever used.
I don't know. I coming from a running background, my running shoes is my everything. I don't think I've been anywhere on the planet without my running shoes. So, you know, I mean, most people are married to their bikes, but for me, it's my running shoes.
Let's talk about the importance of the run. So often, I mean, everyone will tell you, you're not going to win an Ironman in the swim, but you can lose it. The bike is pretty important. The run is pretty important. Coming from a running background, would you say the run's the most important?
I used to, when I started out, my swim was okay. My bike was shocking. I have shocking bike handling skills. And then I usually did the fastest to second fastest run split. But over time, I got a lot stronger on the bike, and I purely got stronger by just bum on seat riding my bike. So I started racing a lot harder on the bike. So it didn't feel like my running would improve that much in comparison to my biking and my swimming. But yeah, I mean, you could lose the race on the bike. You could lose the race on the run. It's all about keeping your head.
Well, you've been to Kona now. You've qualified. Has the bug bitten, or is it sort of out of your system? Is it a place you want to go back? Have you got unfinished business on the island?
I definitely have unfinished business on that island. My race day didn't turn out what I felt like I deserved. But I think that's the journey I needed to take. You learn sometimes so much from failure. I actually had a disastrous day. So yeah, I feel like I've got unfinished business, with the island.
It's funny you say that, Anshan, that you learn lots out of failure, because I think you're right. And sometimes you learn more out of failure than you do out of success. What are some of the big lessons you learned out of that day on the island?
The biggest thing is it means such a build up, and like all the sacrifices I made. I moved three different countries. I moved from England to South Africa to take 9 months off, and then moved to Amsterdam, start afresh again to try and get the money to get to Kona. I probably passed off a lot of people along the way by being a lot more selfish than I normally would be. And then you end up not having the day you feel like you deserve. Everything went wrong from the swim to the bike. I had gear failure. I was sick on the run, and something in me changed. I mentioned before, like, I'm highly competitive. I always feel like I want to be my best. And I realized during the run that, you know, you make all these sacrifices to have this penultimate day, and then everything goes wrong. And it's so, so important to enjoy the journey there, because you could always end up not having the day you were hoping for. So yeah, I ended up having so much fun on that run. I mean, at that point, I mean, the night before the race, they were saying in the race briefing, if you're entering the energy lab, after darkness, it gets really dark out there, and you should have a glow stick with you, or you should be running with a torch. And I was like, for crying out loud, this is world champs. Nobody wants to be racing after dark. And I remember I was running into the energy lab, and the sun starts setting. And I was running, talking to these two guys next to me. I think there was a guy with a prosthetic leg as well. And I was like, here we go. They started handing out glow sticks. And then, I mean, as I was running in darkness, I've never seen such blackness in my life. You couldn't even see if the person in front of you was male, female, old, young. All you could see is this glow stick. So I was literally running from glow stick to glow stick and hearing people's story, and everybody's story is like, I'm not having the day I was meant to have, because obviously these people had qualified some way to get to this race and put a lot of effort in getting there and not having the day they were hoping for. And just hearing their stories made me think, you know, I guess so many people save for their pension one day and work their entire life and get to old age and is too old and too cranky to enjoy that pension that they save. And I think it was the same for me in Kona. You know, I realized how important it is to enjoy every step of the way, which I did. But how important it is to enjoy all the moments in between and not just put everything into the race and then you don't end up having the day you were hoping for.
Anshan, I've absolutely loved chatting to you, and thank you so much for sharing your story. I look forward to hearing when you do get to go back. I know you're one for making decisions and drawing a line in the sand. Have you made that decision when you're going back yet?
No. I think it's moved on by 2 years. I feel like I needed to get some balance in other aspects of my life. So for the moment, it's getting balance again, maybe in a couple of years.
Brilliant stuff. Anshan Clark, thank you so much for joining us on the Kona Edge. Thank you so much. We look forward to catching up again soon.
Thank you, Brad.
And that's it for the very first edition of the Kona Edge. I hope you enjoyed it. I'd love to get your feedback. You can reach out. You can find me on Twitter personally at Big Brad Brown. Or if you'd like, you can just search for the Kona Edge. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, you name it. We are there. So go check it out. Please let me know what your thoughts are. If there's an age grouper that you think we should feature, do be in touch as well. Just search for the Kona Edge on all those various social media platforms. Tag your mate or tag an athlete you think should be on the show. And we'd love to reach out to them. So until next time, from myself, Brad Brown, have yourself a good one. Cheers.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge.
This episode of the Kona Edge is brought to you by the Wahoo Kicker. Whether you're looking for the accuracy and control of a direct drive bike trainer or the flexibility and convenience of a wheel-on solution, Kicker and Kicker Snap are two distinct indoor training solutions. Kicker Indoor Trainer's large flywheel uses new algorithms to improve responsiveness and better replicate the sensation of riding on the road. So whether free riding or using online platforms like Zwift and TrainerRoad, you'll have the same experience you feel on your favorite outdoor rides. To check out their phenomenal range, head over to thekonaedge.com/indoor. That's thekonaedge.com/indoor. Don't forget, if you'd like to access the commercial free feed of the Kona Edge, all you need to do is head over to thekonaedge.com/support, become a patron, and you'll get access to that feed right away.